Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Akhandam Satchidanandam
Mahavakyena lakshyate
Soyam nityadivakyeshu
Virodhatadidantayoho
Tyagena bhagayorekaha
Ashrayo lakshyate yatha
Maya vidye vihayaivam
Upadhi parajivayoho
Akhandam Satchidanandam
Param Brahmaiva Lakshyate
Okay. Tritayin Api Tam Muktva Paraspara
Virodhinim
Akhandam
Sachidanandam
Mahavakyena
Lakshyate
So having given, we're working on the Bhagatyaga Lakshana, where you have to give up that part, that the parts of two different things that are what we call Virodha. They're opposed to each other. So in the situation with the Mahavakya Tattvamasi, the Jiva Upadhi and the Ishwara Upadhi are very, very opposed to each other. And so if I am that or you are that, then these things that are opposed to each other have to be negated. And leaving leaving the identity. And so that's why when we are teaching the Vedanta, you have to really do the viveka, do that, you know, discrimination between the self and the jivatma thoroughly, so they recognize your own self. But then you also have to do it with the tatpada, with the word tat, which means with Ishwara, to recognize also that Ishwara, that this whole creation is nothing but the satchiratma. So then, in this equation that starts out with two things that are completely different from each other, one is very limited, one is limitless, by the negation of actually the Maya Upadhi. It's a negation of the Maya Upadhi from the collective and from the Samishti, right? The Samishti means the total, like the forest, and the Vishti is like the individual. So both the Samishti of the Maya Upadhi and the Vishti, the collective and the total, being mitya, don't have any type of effect or cannot bring any division in the Satchitatma. But that in the Satchitananda Atma. But that has to be very painstakingly established for the mind of the student to not only kind of recognize it, but to understand it logically. And then that's shravana, because to really understand what the shastra is saying, to see it is shravana. And so you have to, it's not just understanding logically, that logic lands on the what we call the anubhava, this experience itself. There's an anubhava, there's an experience of the mityatva of this creation just by trying to by analyzing it. It's not very hard to establish that. Most of the darshanas do establish. Darshanas means the philosophical teachings like the Bao De and others, especially the Bao De and the Buddhists. Bao De is classical for the Buddhists, and the Vedantists don't have any problem with establishing the mityatva of the creation. But so that has to be clearly established by establishing the nature, the mitya nature of this creation, both in terms of Ishwar and in terms of the jiva. Of course, that means that you have to really grasp what mitya means. That's a big thing to understand that. And mitya itself, we can't really understand unless we recognize or have knowledge of the adhishtana, what the thing depends upon for its being. So it takes a lot of teaching to really recognize that, both experientially and logically. But the wonderful thing is that we do have drishtantas that help us to really understand the whole satya-mitya relationship. Rope, snake, clay pot. You know, the clay pot, obviously. The pot has no being apart from the clay. Rope, snake, it's a little different type of drishtanta, but you can see that there's two orders in that one. There's two orders of reality in a little different way than with the clay pot, but the clay pot also, there are two orders of reality, because the pot that you experience isn't anything but clay, you know, so it has no independent being. With the rope snake also, there's two orders of reality. One's a little bit more magical. It brings in projection, how we're capable of projecting something on something else. And the point with the rope snake, to understand the mityatva of the rope snake, we can also use the projections we have onto others. The pratibhasika. Pratibhasika means our own subjective reality is easily projected onto others if the others, in one way or another, even the littlest way, creates a trigger for that. Swamiji used to joke about the woman who raised her eyebrow in a particular way. A whole onslaught of projection from everybody. Why did she raise her eyebrow? Must have been because of this. It was because of this. I know that she was doing that because of something I said. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all crazy. Totally, totally untrue. But what is true about any type of projection is that there's something in common between what has caused you to have that internal emotional trauma or whatever it is, and that eyebrow. So the eyebrow, just the slightest way, it could be in another way that's really, really interesting and very powerful, a person's accent. Like I know probably in Sweden, and just in Sweden probably, there's parts of Sweden, there's many different accents. In the United States, there's many, many different accents depending upon where you were born. And so say your mother has a particular accent, you know, and then somebody else comes along and speaks just like her. That's really a big trigger, you know. It's amazing, actually. And so, in a sense, when she does that, when she speaks exactly like your mother, same intonation, you know, same, even there's some little body language can be the same also in these different areas, then the whole mother complex can land on that person. Mm-hmm. That's projection, you know. And so here, what's common with what I'm just saying is that I was talking about the trigger. There's something common that can hold the projection, right? And here, that's something that is common is something that you has to be actually experienced. It's known to you. Here in the rope snake, you know, the rope is partially known. It's partially known. It's experienced. It's partially experienced in terms of the thisness of the rope. And that thisness of the rope, without being the rope, can take on any amount of projections. So we have the rope snake just to help us to understand that relationship, really. The relationship, both of them are great, but it's nice to have them juxtaposed against each other, next to each other. Because the rope snake, it's very close to your thinking about your imagination or your dream. You think about the snake and its relationship to the rope. Because there's some creation that's taking place on that rope. The clay pot stresses that there's really only one thing here. That's what's stressed. It's obvious that the pot is mitya, but the stress is on the oneness, that there's really only clay there. In the rope snake, the stress is on the projective power of maya when the rope itself is not completely understood. So they perform different functions. So for us to gain knowledge, to be able to see through the maya or to understand the maya is mitya, we have to recognize the adhishtana. We have to recognize the satyam in order for this to be mitya. So what that really means in terms of the teaching methodology is that from the standpoint, if I say tat tvam asi, from the tat pada, from the word tat, we have to be able to see that this whole creation that we look at as a material reality that has weight, which it does from my standpoint, you know, it has weight, it has color, it has objectivity in the sense that it's a shared reality for all of us. We're all experiencing the same thing. It has math, it has science. So how can this be as though dismissed? Well, first of all, that's another problem that we have. First of all, it's not really a dismissal of the brilliance or the genius of this creation. We look at the creation as infinite, infinite knowledge. You know, so to kind of put down or poo-poo the creation or something is not at all the point. It's also not true. But what we do have to see is that this creation, these nama-rupas and this beautiful display is when we analyze it in terms of time and in terms of vastu. Okay. Vastu means on any given object. We analyze it in terms of time and we analyze it in terms of vastu. What we realize is that there is no thing here to be found. First of all, for analyzing this creation, these two little prakriyas, one has to do with existence itself. That for something to exist, it cannot come from non-existence. That's not possible. So if you say that this thing is just popped out from non-existence, then that's going to have an argument from every corner of the earth, really, if we understand what non-existence means. Nothing can come from non-existence. So what that means is that since everything is bound by change, that thing that is experiencing existence, isness, and you're experiencing it, it has to have some being itself that it depends on. It can't have for its adhishtana non-existence. It can't come from non-existence. So it must have some other adhishtana which actually does exist. That's the problem right there. It actually does exist. And what happens as we analyze this creation is like this exists, but yes, it's dependent on this. Like the desk exists, but it's dependent on its adhishtana. Its adhishtana is the wood. Yeah, but the wood also, you know, depends upon something else, which depends upon something else, which depends upon something else, and you'll never get down to the bottom of it. So you can never reach the adhishtana because everything that you think is an adhishtana comes into being and goes out of being. The adhishtana is what is actually there. You know, and like, just think, I mean, the clay pot and Swamiji's, you know, desk wood is, the clay pot is the Shastra, but he has desk wood. I like desk wood. But you, when you think about it, everything that you think is the adhishtana, when one object becomes the adhishtana, you know, of another object, and then that becomes another adhishtana for that, another adhishtana. It goes into an infinite regress because every single thing within the creation that you're saying is an adhishtana actually itself comes into being and goes out of being. So there is no adhishtana within the creation. It's just that we have nice examples. But you can only, you can't push the example past the original clay pot. That's it. You go further than that, then it goes into an infinite regress and there is no adhishtana. But we can do it, you know, relatively with the clay pot or the rope snake, you know, or with the wood desk. But the problem here is that if you go on, you know, trying to find something in this universe, no matter how small you go, it comes into being and goes out of being. So it has no being. And you can't have the adhishtana, the ultimate adhishtana of this creation, to be non-existence. How can it be non-existence? What can come from non-existence? What can build up from non-existence? Nothing. And so the only thing that's going to be the adhishtana of existence, I mean of this world, is existence itself. And why would we say it? Why would we even say that? Are we just making that up? Are we just making it up? Okay, everything has to have an adhishtana. It can't be non-existence, so it's existence. We're not making it up. Because we experience the mityatva of the world as we dissect it in numerous ways. And as we dissect the world, the one thing that always remains is existence, is being. And you can do it to yourself also. The one thing that always remains is existence or being itself. You simply can't get away from that. It's your anubhava. It's your experience. You can even say, as you take every object in all of Ishwar, just you can take him apart. It's the infinite creation. You just take it apart. And what happens? It goes into an infinite regress, you know, and you still haven't found any adhishtana, which you can't find because everything in the creation is coming into being and going out of being and is infinitely divisible. There's no adhishtana. But your adhishtana is right before you. Your adhishtana, that is the truth for all of these objects of Ishwara himself, is the adhishtana for you also. You also are a nama rupa. You are a name and form within the creation. So you also can go into an infinite regress. And I can just take you apart on all different levels, you know, into an infinite regress. We can't even find you. But as we're taking each other apart like that, what remains always? What is it that remains is conscious being. That's it. Not a knower, not consciousness as a knower, but just the amness, which is my adhishtana, that I can never touch in any way. If I'm dissecting something, the conscious being is not dissected. You know? If something comes into existence and goes out of existence, existence remains. The object, the Maya, comes into existence and goes out of existence, but I am the existence which it comes into and goes out of. And so, this adhishtana, from my own standpoint, it's best to realize it from my own standpoint first. In terms of our teaching methodologies, I try to realize it from my own standpoint first, because then I realize from this nama rupa and the different layers of it, the subtle, the physical body and the subtle body, etc., I realize that the me, the conscious being, doing all this viveka, is not something that exists within the creation to come into being and go out of being. Nor can it, because space is objectified, nor can I be divided into many little pockets of consciousness existing within space, when space itself is, I'm aware of, it's a subject-object relationship. And space comes into being and goes out of being. And all the time, when I go to deep sleep, or even I close my eyes, that's enough. So simple, I close my eyes, no more space. None of you are there either. We don't take that seriously, what I just said, because in your mind, it'll be, well, that's only an experience. We know all along that it's still there. But the problem with that logic is that I can't take an experience out of myself. Right? And so if I can remove an experience from me, it doesn't belong to me. That's the anvaya vyatireka. It doesn't even talking about material things. If I close my eyes and all of this is not being experienced by me, it doesn't belong to me. Because I still am, my self-experience still is, and this isn't there. You know? So you don't believe in all of that initially because I am this body, and we're talking about the same orders of reality, so I close my eyes and my body is still here and I know you're still there. But actually, when I close my eyes, the form of my body is not here, experienced, the space is not experienced, and you're not experienced, but I am fine. Conscious being has not been touched in any way. And so this understanding of experience versus material reality is something also that has to be chipped away at in terms of the different orders of reality and what we talk about, this absolute order of reality, this absolute satyam of my own being. It doesn't come into being or go out of being. So all we have all this logic, we throw it at you in this way and that way and this way and that way for some good period of time because your mind not only has to recognize yourself, that viveka has to take place, you know, where that ajnanam is removed, but also all of the notions and all of the logics that we have that exist within duality have got to fall because they don't apply anymore. They apply within duality. But what is the relationship between the logic that we have within duality and the relationship of this creation to myself? They're two different orders of reality. So that's an amazing thing to understand, and we have to understand it in reference to the Tvampada, to myself, and in reference to the Tatpada, to Ishvara. You know, that Ishvara also is me. I am its Adhishtana. This very personal me is the Adhishtana of Ishvara. So I can say, Ishvara's self is myself. The one who is here, that is the self of Ishvara. But then you might think, and I'm this body, mind, sense organs. No. The self of Ishvara is yourself. Yourself is the self of Ishvara. So this has to be seen both from Tatpada and from Tvampada. And in that way, that identity, this equation, this Swamiji always calls it an equation of you are that, is solved. It's solved by being able to differentiate myself and the self of Ishvara from the Maya Upadi. So that's what has to happen. And so now he's just kind of putting this in, just in summarizing this in this verse. I read this verse, right? Okay. And then he goes on to give a drishtanta. So here's the verse. He says, Tritayim api tam muktva. Having abandoned, given up, released, like moksha, released, having released this group of three characteristics, we can say, of maya. The character, what we're giving up is that in terms of this group of three has been listed here in 44 and 45. For the jiva, we're giving up the malinya sattva, you know, the upadi. We're giving up the jiva upadi. And then for Ishvara, we're giving up two aspects, the nimitta upadana karana. We're giving up Ishvara, Brahman as the material cause, and Brahman as the nimitta karana. The Brahman as the material cause uses the tamasic aspect of maya to project this nama rupa in the form of the creation. And we give up the sattva, the total sattva, of the Maya Upadi, which allows Ishvara to be what we call the Nimitta Karana. So for Ishvara, the Upadana Karana, the Nimitta Karana, the material cause and the efficient cause are given up. And for the Jiva, this Malina Sattva is given up, the Jiva Twam. That's the three they're talking about. So having given up these three, having given up this group of three, which are what? So that Maya, Tam Maya, which is this group of three, which are what? paraspara virodhinin, which are mutually, paraspara virodhinin, they're mutually opposed to each other. The Ishwara Upadhi and the Jiva Upadhi are opposite. You can't say that the Ishwara Upadhi is the Jiva Upadhi. These two have to be given up. So having given up those, what do you have? Akhandam. Akhanda means undivided. I'll talk about that word in a minute. Akhandam, Satchidanandam. The Akhanda, the undivided Satchidananda, which is the name, Satchidanandam, which is the name for Brahman. Brahman is Satchidananda, limitless, undivided, by the Mahavakya, Lakshyate. So having given up the differentiating Maya attributes, Upadis, then what? Then by the Mahavakya, the Satchidananda Atma remains. So, because I'm a conscious being, we understand from the Vedas, from the Upanishads, Ishwara is a conscious being. Is there one conscious being or two conscious beings? Is there a little conscious being and a giant conscious being? Or is there only one conscious being? The Advaita. How can there be Advaita? How can there be one conscious being? How can I be Ishwara? That is the whole equation that has to be solved in the Advaita Vedanta, in the Upanishads. I am Ishwara, how can that be possible? I am little, Ishwara is big, infinite. How can these two come together? Through that Bhagatyaga Lakshana, which is really the removal of the Maya Upadhi for Ishwara and the Avidya Upadhi, which is the other side of Maya, for the Jiva. So I, the conscious being, have to first be differentiated. This is why Viveka is so critical. Before I can remove something, let's just throw out the Jiva and throw out Ishwara. It's not like that. First we have to differentiate myself from the Jiva Upadhi so that I know without any doubt that I am not that. That's like a dress. It's a Maya dress. And so I have to see very clearly that I am not that dress. I am not that Upadhi. I'm not that Jiva Upadhi. And I have to see very clearly that Ishwara also is not the Ishwara Upadhi. That the Ishwara Upadhi is mitya. It's not that hard to prove that either. I'll just give you quickly some little logics that we went through. It's not very hard to prove that this is Maya, that this Maya is mitya, because it all comes into being and goes out of being. It's all continually changing. If you analyze it, you can't find it. You know, it's like a ghost. Where is it? I don't know. Where is it? You can't find it. It keeps breaking up into smaller and smaller pieces. To find it, you have to take the form off, and then you can't see it. You know? So we don't have the pramanas to be able to find what is actually here. But we don't need pramanas. We don't need our sense organs to find what actually here is here. We have to just, this one upadhi is enough. You have to see what is actually here that is not mitya? What is actually here that doesn't come into being and goes out of being? What is actually here that is not subject to division? Because if it comes into being and goes out of being, or if it changes, it's mitya. You know, because it's bordered by non-existence. So here, I am not non-existent. And yet everything I've taken myself to be comes into being and goes out of being. It's mitya. And for something to be mitya, mitya can't have non-existence as its adhishtana. So I must be, something about me must be that adhishtana for what comes into being and goes out of being. And that is what's going to be real, right? And that has to be me. Because I can't be the one who's non-existent. I have to be, in the end, the one who exists. Or what would that be like? Who somebody else is going to be the one who is, and I'm the one who isn't. That is not our experience. Our experience is I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. And every single thing about these upadhis is continually changing without any exception. So I am the conscious being who is the adhishtana of all of this that is changing. Ishwara is the conscious being of all of this, all of which is continually changing. This whole creation is as much mitya as this body. What would make this creation not mitya? when it's continually changing, coming into being and going out of being, every single part of it, nothing is constant. And you analyze any part of the, pick out any corner of the creation and analyze it. You can't find anything there. It just keeps breaking up into an infinite regress of smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller things, you know? So whether it's the mityatva of Ishwar or the mityatva of this, body, mind, sense organs, my experience is that I am and I exist. I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. And I'll say then, okay, what does that look like? Well, I'm sorry, I can't see it. What do you mean you can't see it? You can't see it? No, I can't see it. It's not an object. So this all goes against our means of knowledge. So if you can't see it, if it's not available for your seeing, it doesn't exist. But actually, everything we see doesn't exist without the self. And why can't I see the self? I am the self. I can't see it as an object within mitya. It's impossible. I would have to also not exist. So the one who exists is the one who is existence. The one who exists is the one who is existence. The one who is conscious is the one who is consciousness. Because you can't see consciousness either. You can only be that. And so there's no other adhishtana under that, and there need not be one under that, because you're already outside of maya. Because you can't see it, you can't change it, there's no time, there's no space. It can only be an infinite presence, a changeless presence, a non-dual presence, which doesn't have a second person. If there's a second person, I'm within space. So that's why there's only one me and many, many mirrors. Within maya, many, many mirrors, and each mirror says, each jiva says, I am a conscious being, I am a conscious being, I am a conscious being. The little mosquitoes, I am too. I am a conscious being. In their own language. All of them are the conscious being, the one conscious being, which is the adhishtana, the reality of this whole thing. So this is what has to be known, and it's known through this ma, by means of the Mahavakya, which points to that Satchit Atma having revealed the nature of the Tat Pada and the Twam Pada. The Pada means word. The word Tat and the word Tat and the word Twam. All of the mitya, all of the attributes, the upadis, that are, you prove them to be mitya, all along pointing at what is satyam. So that's the whole, the teaching methodology has to do that for you, and has to do that for Ishwara, so that you can say what is the vision of the Upanishads is I am Ishwara. I have to say I am Ishwara. Then it's fine. Everything is perfect. And if I say I am Ishwara, what does that mean? It means I am Brahman with this maya. Ishwara is Brahman with maya. Maya is mitya. So Brahman with mitya maya projects as this whole creation, which is maya for Ishwara and avidya for the jiva, because of the limited upadhi. So I have to be with, I have to recognize the changelessness of my being. As I walk around in this mitya world, I am not walking. I have to see both. From the standpoint of the body, I'm walking around, but I am not walking. I am not talking. I am not hearing. I'm not blinking. There's a verse like this in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not doing anything. I'm doing all these things, but I'm not doing anything. The one who's not doing anything is self-evident me. So now our task is to differentiate self-evident me from the one who's walking and talking and doing, from these upadis. Both are here at exactly the same time, in exactly the same place, to be differentiated. So that always, no matter what your, one of the wonderful things about it, no matter what your mind is doing, what it's thinking, what it's feeling, what the emotions are taking place, that's all going on. It all belongs to the mind and the unconscious and all. That's all going on. But it's all going on in you who are not doing anything and not touched by it in any way. So your mind and your body and the creation always has a changeless refuge, which is the Satchitatma, the Satchitanandatma. It's another thing that we have to spend time in meditation and whatnot, is to fall in love with that Atma, to recognize that there is nothing really more dear, to see that it's the, that this self is the most beloved, that there's everything else is for the sake of this, for this self. But that realization is really, I would say, I would say that that realization is moksha. That this self is, there is nothing more dear. Because otherwise, it's kind of like, okay, well, I've differentiated the existence, so I'm non-dual existence. Wow. it's not enough. It's not enough. I have to be non-dual ananda. I have to be what I seek, what I've spent lifetime seeking in the world. I have to recognize is me, is my own being. That's the moksha. When I recognize that, there is no seeking anymore. There's no seeking. There's just being. There's being in the creation, being with Ishwara, being with your prarabdha karma, enjoying the ananda of the self. That's the moksha. I don't need to accomplish anything anymore. That's the kritta kritya. What has to be done has been done. That's all. Now I'm just recognize Ishwara and the wonder of this world and the wonder of all of the people I know and all of my relationships and all of the things that take place day by day by day is an amazing, amazing thing, because I can appreciate it as Ishwara without having to the little head of the jiva, you know, popping out and saying, well, what about me? What about me? I need this to be happy and I need that to be happy. We don't need anything to be happy. And that's where you can be happy with everything. If you don't need anything to be happy, you can be happy with everything because you're not asking it to make you happy. Right? That's a beautiful thing. So now he gives an example, a very famous example. This example is called Soyam Devadatta. Devadatta is the name of a person. So that Devadatta is this Devadatta. So let's look at this example. So he says, okay, after me. Soyam.
Soyam.
Iti.
Iti.
Adi.
Adi.
Vakyeshu.
Vakyeshu.
Virodhat.
Virodhat.
Tadidantayoho.
Tadidantayoho.
Chagena.
Chagena.
Bhagayoho.
Bhagayoho.
Ekaha.
Ekaha.
Ashrayaha.
Ashrayaha.
Lakshate.
Lakshate.
Yatha.
Yatha.
So. Soyam means he is this. This is him. He is this. Saha ayam iti adi vakyeshu. By vakyas, by statements such as that Devadatta is this Devadatta. So I'll just tell a little story. That how Swamiji tells it. You know? There's this fellow named his name is Devadatta. In India, he's an Indian boy, Indian man. And so two friends are talking, and they both see this fellow with some fellow coming up the path quite at a distance. And one friend says, hey, do you know that guy? Do you remember that guy? And he looks at the other friend, looks at him, and he says, no, I don't know him. I don't know him. And this fellow, he keeps approaching. And his other friend says, that's Devadatta. That's Devadatta. And he looks, and the guy keeps approaching. What Devadatta? What Devadatta is he? Who? And then his friend says, you know, our best friend in third grade. You know, they're in their 50s now. Our best friend in third grade, Devadatta. Do you see? Can you see him? And he looks, and Devadatta is approaching, and he looks, and then he starts to kind of see this old Devadatta. He sees the young Devadatta in the old Devadatta, right? And he goes, yes, you are Devadatta. You are Devadatta, my best friend, one of my best friends when we were in third grade. You are that Devadatta. And so what has to happen is that the Devadatta, here they are, you know, in Mumbai, in Bombay, and then they were both together in the third grade down in Chennai. That's a long ways away. So here, in terms of time, like, what, 45 years have gone by. Okay, so there's going to be a difference in the Upadhi for sure. So 45 years have gone by. And also, now they're in Mumbai, and they used to both live, all of them live together in Chennai and going to school together. So that's a long ways away. So the time and the place have to be dropped off, right? That's the Bhagatyaga. You have to drop the time and place off of the young Devadatta and the old Devadatta to recognize this old Devadatta is this young Devadatta. That's their example that has gone through thousands of years. So soyam ityadi, so by such a vakya as that is this, you are, that one is this one, he says, virodat, from giving up the tad idanta. So the substantive here is, because I was, Shard and I were talking about this, so I couldn't figure it out at first. So it's tad idanta, the abstract, in the feminine. And then in the feminine six-two, it becomes tad idantayoho, like sitayoho. Okay, so that's what it is. So from the viroda of the thatness and the thisness, dropping off the thatness and the thisness, the thatness of the guy who was, we knew in third grade, you know, in Chennai, you know, 45 years ago, and this older person here who is here right now in Mumbai. Okay, so that's the that and the this. So by tyagena bhagayoho, by eliminating, by the renouncing, giving up these two parts, then the ekaha ashriyaha lakshyate. That means the one ashriya. Here the ashriya means the locus. The locus is Devadatta, this person standing here. You're giving up the new and the old, and now you're left with the Devadatta, who is both the Devadatta of now and before. These two, the thatness and thisness are dropped, and you're left with the one, ekaha ashriyaha. So he says, that is what is pointed out by this friend. So that's an example in the world of Bhagatyaga Lakshana. Because we have in the introduction here, there's a question like, has anybody in the world ever had an experience of this Vachartya, the immediate meaning of the words being dropped off to show a lakshyartha, an implied meaning of the word? Where have we ever seen that? Do you have an example of it? You're using it for tattvamasi. Where have we ever seen anything like that? Soyam devadattaha. This is where we've seen that. There is another example that we use all the time, is the wave ocean. Say you have the waves, many, many countless waves in the ocean. Right? So you have the ocean is Ishwara. The Ishwara ocean and the Jiva waves. You know? And that's true. There are many, many waves, and there was one Ishwara ocean, and all of these little waves are part of Ishwara. Right? So if we do the Bhagatyaga Lakshana, we have to drop off the Nama Rupas. Right? We have to take the waves off of the wave water. So you have to remove those waves and look at the water. And then out of Ishwara, we have to remove the collective waves, right? The whole body of waves that makes up the ocean form. We have to remove that and see what the water. Then water is water. Then we have the Mahavakya. Oh wave, you are the ocean. I'm not the ocean. I'm the wave. I'm a part of the ocean. Well, on one level, you're a part of the ocean, but when you give up the wave upadhi, And the ocean gives up the ocean upadhi, then there's only water there. You are that water. That's another example for this Bhagatyaga Lakshana. Okay? we have to meet. Maya avidye.
Maya avidye.
Vihaya.
Vihaya.
Evam.
Evam.
Upadi.
Upadi.
Parajivayoho.
Parajivayoho.
Akandam.
Akandam.
Sachidanandam.
Sachidanandam.
Param brahmaiva.
Param brahmaiva.
Lakshyate.
Lakshyate.
So this is the Darshtanta. Soyam Devadattaha is the Drishtanta. This is the Darshtanta. So he's wrapping up this little section. So he says, Maya avidya, Maya dwanda compound, Maya and avidya, vihaya, giving those up. Evam upadi. So having given up the Maya and the avidya, which are what? The two upadis. Upadi is dual. Upadi. They are the upadis of the Paramatma, Para, and Jiva Yoho. So the two upadis, one for the Paramatma, Ishwar, and the other for the Jiva. So having given up Maya, which is for the Ishwar upadi, and when with that Maya is avidya for the Jiva upadi. So having given up these two upadis, which are Maya, called Maya and avidya, what do we have? Akandam, Sachiranandam, Param Brahma Eva Lakshyate. By giving up these two in the Mahavakya, the Vachartha, the immediate meaning of the word, and replace it by the Lakshartha, the implied meaning of the word, when the Vachartha, the immediate meaning of the word, doesn't work, then you have to go to the implied meaning of the word, which is called the Lakshartha. So here, when we give up the Maya and Avidya, when you give up the Maya and Avidya upadis of the Paramatma, of Ishwar, and of the Jiva, What is then left? The akandam, non-dual, sachit anandam, param brahma alone. So that's that. Om Tat Sat.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.